skids, goats. My dad came out to watch me milk goats. My dad's a lifelong educator, and you know, he's part of this generational ideal that it'll always be better for the next generation than it was for the past one, which means that we'll always be able to exploit other people for our stuff, because we'll always be making more made-up money. So my dad comes out to visit the property, stayed down there in his motorhome. Now, there's an interesting culture. Right? You drive around in a $30,000 truck pulling a $50,000 trailer looking for a free place to park. He stays for 3 days, just long enough to come out one time, watch me milk the goats, so he could shake his head and say, "I never thought a kid of mine would be reduced to milking a goat." No pun intended, I'm sure. And it's just cultural. Why would you leave a good job, a high-paying, low-work, prestigious job? People think you're something when you're a professor. I have this colleague who's a professor of violin. He says, if I quit my university job, I'm not a professor of violin, I'm a fiddle player. It's all about identity or ego. So he can't quit, because then he becomes that guy people ask to play the Orange Blossom Special, right? Now he's something important. I was something important, now I milk goats. It's a tragedy. Another digression. Speaking of tragedy, you know the root word of our word tragedy comes from two Greek words, tragedwa, which mean goat song. Song of the goat means tragedy. Every time I walk by the goats, they bat me. I say, I know, it's a tragedy. And it is. They don't get it. Ducks, they laugh every time. I know. I still appreciate their sense of humor because they laugh all the time. We also have an orchard that has about 60 trees in it now, and a water delivery system for the orchard. The trees are now 1 year old and 2 years old this month, and none of them are shorter than me, and a majority should be producing fruit next year. So that's very exciting.
Is it gravity fed?
Oh, you're breaking my heart.
Yeah, it's great.
We have a pump.
Oh, you do? How are you
going to
run that pump?
It's a tragedy. I'm telling you. I'll get there in a minute. We also harvest water from the straw bale house we have built on the property, and also from the 16-year-old mobile home on the property. So we have two 3,000-gallon cisterns, harvest water that we use for watering the gardens. I'd just like to point out in this picture that I have my post-carbon transportation already lined up. Most people think it looks a little small, but I understand you shrink when you get older. I plan to live a long time. We also have means for preparing the food. We built an outdoor kitchen. It has an old-fashioned hand mill in it that, of course, I used twice, and it made my elbow hurt. The age of entitlement comes to mind. So I bought a evaporative cooler fan for $100 and hooked it up to it to run off the solar system so we can grind our mesquite beans and our flour, our wheat flour, and our corn flour using the solar system now. And we also have these double sinks. I put all this stuff in, by the way. Sinks, I'm a plumber now. We have sun ovens to cook food. We use these almost every day. And we have an old-fashioned wood-fired cook stove. It's new, but it's old-fashioned. And that we reserve mostly for large projects, like canning for all day, that sort of thing, because it's just not worth firing the thing up unless you're doing a lot of work with it. So what about Austin? Can we produce food in here, food in the city of Austin to provide for all the people over here? Conventional agriculture requires 3 to 5 acres per person. The way we do agriculture in this country, at the incredibly gross scale we do it, requires 3 to 5 acres per person, depending on whether you're vegetarian or not. But of course, we don't have to do that. Intensive organic agriculture will support 4 to 6 people per acre, so it turns the thing on its head. We could do that. We could convert rapidly so that we're growing a vast majority of our own food. On the property I live, we have 5 people, ultimately, including the 7-year-old, and we have about an acre under cultivation. So we're thinking that might be sufficient. We'll see. Nobody gets out alive. It's all a big experiment. If you take the geographic city limits of Austin and divide by the 800-some thousand people who live there, you come up with about 5 people per acre. So it sounds, we can do that, right? That's between the 4 to 6 people per acre. So yes, we can. Or maybe not, because if you remove all the hardscape, you're down to more than 10 people per acre. So.
What number did you use for how big Austin is?
800-some thousand.
People, I mean,
I don't remember what the acres was. You could do the math for me faster than I can. And I did the math a week ago, so completely out of my memory by now. So the hardscape means all the pavement we have here. We're going to have to get rid of all of that to get...
As well as half the county, which has got shallow soil.
Sure. No, I'm trying to be an optimist here.
I'm glad you told me.
So there are challenges associated with trying to grow all of your food in Austin. What about community? In my community, I'm surrounded by life-loving economic doomers, and I recognize that that's redundant. You have to be hoping the industrial economy completes its collapse if you actually love life. It's interesting, I was unloading some straw bales. You know, when you order straw bales, they come on a truck. And 2 guys drive the truck up, and they sit there and smoke cigarettes while you unload it. And they call in advance to make sure you got help. We're not helping unload that straw. That stuff's heavy. So I called a neighbor, Andy, up the road, asked if he'd help me unload straw bales. Yeah, sure. Well, as it turns out, I had 2 students from the University of Arizona visiting, and neither of them had seen a straw bale before or picked up a shovel in their 30 and 35-year-old lives, which I found quite astonishing. And so I had them pick up shovels. They thought that was kind of cool until we actually got behind them for a while. That takes the fun out of it. So we're unloading the straw bales, the 2 students and I. And Andy sees the truck come. He starts riding his bicycle down. He jumps off his bike. He starts unloading. You know, already he's been there 1 minute. He's unloaded twice as much as the 3 of us have combined because he actually knows how to work. And yeah, I didn't even introduce him yet. You know, he just dives in. We're throwing straw bales off the truck. I don't even say who these other people are. And Andy says, oh, you got oat straw here. Oat straw, that's great. I just scythed my oats. Got finished scything those. Man, if the industrial economy ends tomorrow, we'll be in good shape on our place. And these 2 students are like, their eyes are as big as dinner plates. Like, what? People don't talk about this. You can't just say that in everyday conversation. Yeah, you can. In my community, people talk about it all the time and hope for it. We have a thriving barter community within what Jefferson would have called agricultural anarchy, what Ed Abbey did call agrarian anarchy. That is, reliance upon individuals, responsibility upon individuals within a community framework, not depending upon the government, not relying upon any governmental or large-scale organization to take care of things like growing food and supplying the water. From a personal perspective, I'm new there. So I'm trying to fit in. It's made much easier by the fact that we're sharing property with a couple who have lived there for quite a long time. So we're in even before we show up. But then I'm trying to do other things too. So I substitute teach at the K-12 school. It's like the one-room schoolhouse I graduated from high school in. K-12 with 100-some students. And it doesn't really matter what the subject is I'm teaching. You know, PE is all about entropy too, which brings up the second law of thermodynamics, which brings up Pico. It's just one step away, really. I'm helping in a community-based project that is reintroducing river otters into the local river. And so this appeals to my conservation side, sort of mainstream conservation, but I get to work shoulder to shoulder with another 30 people in my community who also are interested in bringing the otters back to a place they haven't been since 1934.